Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arseblog Arsecast right here on arseblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. Just a bit of a quick public information bit to start this show. The first 10 minutes of this podcast are going to be available here on Arseblog. I've then sold the rights for the second 23 minutes to another company, which you can listen to there. That's $29.99 a month, but if you want it in HD, it's $39.99 a month. Then the final bit of the podcast is with another company entirely. They will stream the last part of the podcast to you, but you have to have a smart fridge coupled with one of those Alexa things. So you have to go, Alexa, play the Arseblog Arsecast on my smart fridge, and my voice will come booming out of the front of your fridge, and that's how you listen to the last part of the show. And then the bit after the music, what you have to do is send a stamped addressed envelope to Arseblog 7 Dublin, and I will return to you within 28 days a cassette tape on which you can hear the final part of the show on your Sony Walkman, which I'm sure you have up in the attic somewhere. It's just how things are working these days. It's called content distribution. It's the way all the cool kids are doing it. The Premier League, probably Radiohead. They're probably doing some shit like that. Loads of people. It's the way forward. Why make it convenient for somebody by saying, here's everything you need in one handy package. Just use that. And you can watch and listen to what you want, wherever you want, on whatever device you want, whether it's your TV or your tablet or your phone or your speak and spell. I mean, technology is supposed to make our lives better and more convenient. And in some ways it does. In some ways, obviously it does. But in other ways, it really doesn't. Like this week, I needed to get some old bank statements for one reason or another. The reason doesn't matter. But of course, we've got internet banking. Could I do it there? No, I rang up the helpline. They said, oh, we'll put you through to the branch. The branch said, no, we can't do that. You've got to talk to customer care. Customer care said, oh, yeah, we can do that, but it takes 21 days. And I'm going, it takes 21 days to get me some bank statements. Yeah, and I was like, no, I can't do this. So I went down to the branch and spoke to a person, and within 5 minutes, I had what I wanted. Human interaction sometimes is actually a good thing. I know it's crazy. I mean, you can't see how popular somebody is when you speak to them face-to-face, can you? Where is their follower count? You can't look at their timeline to see what kind of a person you're dealing with, but sometimes, just sometimes, it's actually worth it. Now, I'm not saying do it all the time, because ultimately, you know, it's human interaction, whether it's via keyboard or via face-to-face, you know, you will find somebody who will let you down, who will be disappointing, who does not give you what you want exactly when you want it, in the manner in which you deserve it. But my experience this week was pretty positive. We have had a week in which we've made a signing, the very first signing of the Unai Emery era, or the very first signing of the post-Wenger era, went through. Stefan Lichtsteiner joins on a free transfer. After 7 years in Turin with Juventus, he's had a lot of success there. So we're going to get some information on him, what kind of a player he is, what we can expect from him, and what he might bring to this squad both on and off the pitch. We'll be talking to Paolo Bandini now in just a second. I'll also be talking to Paolo about Unai Emery, his appointment, what he expects from the new manager, new head coach, from the new football executive committee. And also we'll be looking at the Premier League football rights. Some of the games have gone to Amazon from the start of next season. Is this the start of something different? Is it the start of something new? We already know that the way people watch football has changed, is changing, has changed, whatever way you want to say it. Are they going to face up to this new reality, or are they too tied into the traditional deals that they have with the likes of Sky and BT? We'll find out. So let's welcome to the show Paolo Bandini. Hi there.
Hey, Andrew. How are you?
I'm all right. Thanks very much. Now, the reason I want to talk to you is because Arsenal have made their first signing of the summer, the first signing of the Unai Emery era. I don't know if we can say, actually, that Unai Emery makes a signing anymore. We put up a story on Arsblog News where we said Unai Emery, or Lichtsteiner, Stefan Lichtsteiner becomes Unai Emery's first capture, and people are all, well, actually, it's the Sven Mislintat and Raul and Ivan who are doing the transfers. Emery has got nothing to do with them, but for the ease of just talking about it, we can assume, let's say it's a manager or a head coach, if you like, bringing in a player. Stefan Lichtsteiner, vastly experienced defender. You've seen a lot of him, obviously, at Juventus. What do you make of this one? Because he is mature, I think would be a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, interestingly, it sort of struck me a little bit as a step down from, and maybe that's just a realistic reflection of where the two clubs are, but it's a sort of a step down version of a Juventus signing. I mean, these are the sorts of signings that Juventus have been very good at in recent years, is looking at someone who's approaching the end of their career and you know, is certainly no longer physically at their peak, but who can still do something for them and contribute on a free transfer. And obviously the most recent example, the most recent highly successful example, even though it was only there for a year, is Dani Alves, who they took from Barcelona and played a huge part in their run to the Champions League final. Now, again, you know, let's emphasize that I did say step down there. I'm not suggesting that Lichtsteiner is going to come in and have the sort of impact at Arsenal that Dani Alves did at Juventus. But I do think it's a perfectly sensible, pragmatic signing. I think he's a player who can contribute. I think he's a player who demonstrably did contribute at Juventus last season, and this Juventus team, everyone's going to have their own ideas of the relative standards of different leagues, but this Juventus team got 95 points in Serie A. They won the double for the fourth season running. They went to the quarterfinals of the Champions League and only lost to Real Madrid in the end, albeit after a catastrophe of a first leg. They only lost by one goal across two legs, and so, you know, he was a functional, useful player for that team. Was he first choice? No. In general, if Allegri had the choice, he was picking Decilio over Lichtsteiner. Was he one of the best players in the team when he was there? Still, no. You know, he was a functional right back. But did he have a role to play on that team? Yes, he played, I think, something like 21 starts in the league. He played in the second leg comeback against Real Madrid. He started, and actually, I think, played pretty well in that game. He definitely got an assist in that game. He played in big games as well as just sort of regular games. And most of the time, he did a perfectly serviceable job. He's a step slower than he used to be. He's certainly, and it's sort of hard to pick apart exactly what is his age and what is tactical shift in the balance of the way Juventus played this season. But he certainly played a less ambitious game this season than he has in the past. I think that's been a bit of a steady process of slightly less getting forward from him year on year. In his prime, he was a player who really would get forward quite a lot and put some good crosses in. I think he's still got a good cross on him, actually, but he doesn't have the legs to get him up there as much as he used to.
Would that be a concern for you, given that he is 34? The Premier League, I don't know if it's just a cliche or if it's a truism or whatever it is, that is probably a little quicker, a little more physically intense than Serie A. Well, you know, with that, I mean,
it is a faster league. You know, it's a cliche, but it's also true. Like, and anyone in Serie A will tell you that. A lot of people in Serie A, who I've spoken to before about England and not succeeding in international tournaments, have said that they think English players run too hard during the season and don't have enough left at the end of seasons, which is an interesting take. But it's a faster league, I think that, of course, that's going to have some impact. But again, I think it's all about, look, for any player, it's all about how you use him. I think Lichtsteiner is actually, I don't think he's sort of suddenly, and he's 34 years old, I don't think he's suddenly unable to run cover a good distance over the course of a game. What he's lost is just a tiny bit of his pace.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about his stamina and about his ability to play 90 minutes and to run hard when he needs to. I think he's always been quite a diligent, hard worker anyway. But there will be wingers in the Premier League who can beat him for pace. I think that's unquestionably true. Whether or not you are putting him in positions to get exposed all the time comes down to your manager. And I think that's probably, again, look at how he played at Juventus this season. He was more cautious. He didn't get up the pitch as much as he used to. He was much more operating out of his own half rather than the opposition half. And I think the really significant change from the season, actually, because it was interesting what happened at Juventus this season. You know, he wasn't included in the Champions League squad for the group stages, and he then got promoted to the Champions League squad in the second half of the season. And I think that first of all was indicative that he was performing perhaps at a higher level than people realised. Secondly, a realisation that, you know, just in general, he was a useful player to have as part of that squad. But perhaps also a reflection of the fact that Juventus were no longer playing at all really with a back three. And I think as a wing back, he simply didn't have it anymore. You can't play him a 3-5-2 as you used to earlier in his career and expect him to get up and down that flank. But in a you know, a cautious 4-3-1-2 or 4-3-3 or whatever you want to make it, like, yeah, I think he can be a fairly reliable fullback for you. I think, yeah, look, Leroy Sané can probably start running. I'm sure that's true of lots of young forwards in the Premier League. Mohamed Salah is going to outrun him.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that he has to be a liability. And look, I mean, you know, we haven't said it yet, but I don't think anyone's looking at this signing and presuming he's first choice. He's probably your alternative to Hector Bellerin, unless Bellerin leaves, I guess.
Well, I don't think that's going to happen. It would be hugely ambitious to expect a 34-year-old to come in and be able to do the job that Hector Bellerin was asked to do last season. Clearly, he was, in my opinion anyway, he was asked to do too much without proper backup. And Lichtsteiner obviously provides that kind of assurance, reassurance for Europa League, for particular Premier League games perhaps, but also just to take the burden off him. But one of the things that Unai Emery said, and something that Lichtsteiner himself said, was about his experience and about his knowledge and about what he could bring to the squad in that regard. And he comes to Arsenal after an amazingly successful spell with Juventus, 7 successive Serie A titles, is that right?
Yeah.
You know, it's a track record of winning, and winning is something that some of these Arsenal players have got experience of, obviously with the FA Cup, but to have somebody in the dressing room and on the training pitch who can impart some of that wisdom is not necessarily a bad thing either.
No, I completely agree. I really agree with that. I think Lichtsteiner has always struck me as one of the players in that Juventus team who really, really loathes losing. And I think that's something that has certainly been characteristic of that side. I think it's something that perhaps goes for lots of top-level athletes. You'd hope it would, but I guess at Juventus, the difference is that they make sure that they don't. You know, I think lots of athletes will say they loathe losing and still tolerate it, and others will go and graft and graft and graft. And I do think Lichtsteiner is a grafter. I think he's someone who's always worked hard. He's never been, even at his peak, he wasn't the guy who you looked at and said, wow, here's the sort of physical freak who's doing things that no other player on the football pitch can do. He's there because he's always been committed, and not just committed in the sort of, oh, you know, blood running down your shirt way we like to think about committed in the being diligent about the way you eat and the way you work out and the way you rest and your time away from the football pitch, to make sure that when you play on Saturday or Sunday or Wednesday or Thursday, that you're going to be playing at the highest level you can play at. And I think that's, you know, that's almost probably the thing which I have felt at times that Arsenal need the most in the last few years is not like, it's not that we need to see people screaming and shouting and you know, kicking an opponent to prove they care. Just prove you care by putting in the hard hours. That's what makes a difference. That is what makes a difference. And it's been fascinating these last few years with Juventus. Cause I know everyone will look at 7 titles in a row and they just go, oh, well, Juventus are the richest, so they always win. And look, there's a lot of truth in that. They are the richest, and that's a huge leg up. But to pretend they haven't been pushed by teams in the last few years is nonsense. I mean, Napoli got 91 points this season. Napoli were brilliant. And the difference with Juventus was that they always just maintained their level all the way through. They lost a few games here and there, but even when they lost to Napoli at the end of the season, it looked like they were all set to the world to come down with games away at Inter and Roma. They just kept playing to their level. And I think Lichtsteiner is that sort of guy, because he works hard, because he puts in the hard hours, because he's always setting himself up to succeed. You know, you're probably going to get that. Not always 10 out of 10 out of him, but you're going to get 6.5 and 7 out of him most of the time. And that's what has sort of marked him out through his career, I think.
Sure. Some people have said that he's got a touch of the, you know, the cynic Can we call it that in him as a player that something perhaps that Arsenal have been missing? We have been as a team perhaps perceived, not always correctly, but as being a bit too nice or a bit too soft. And maybe that's an issue that they've identified and something that needs to be addressed. That's part of his game, I believe.
Yeah, and I mean, look, you know, there comes a point where it's hard to pick apart someone who's been at a club for 7 years from the club around them. I think that Juventus 100% have that characteristic, have that reputation and live up to it as a club. And I think when you look at even this year in the Champions League, the two legs against Tottenham, I think if you were being honest about those two legs, Tottenham outplayed them. But who won in the end? It was Juventus, because Juventus are ruthless. They're a team that are extremely effective at getting results when they need to get results. And I think that Lichtsteiner has a lot of that in his personality and the way he plays the game. If he needs to bring someone down to get the job done, then he'll bring someone down to get the job done. He's not afraid of the niggling foul. He's not afraid to pick up a yellow card. And I think he's got a little bit of that. In Italian, they always say cattiveria, which sort of translates to nastiness. I'm never sure if nasty is quite the right word, but you know what I mean. Cynical is probably the right word. It's the willingness to not be a nice guy when you need to do the thing that's a little bit underhand if it gets you what you want. I say it again. Like, I think character-wise, I think he's definitely a nice fit for me. I think that football-wise, he has something to offer. I also sort of don't want to sit here and, because I'm saying all positive things about him, I don't want people to come away thinking, wow, he's really going to transform the club. I don't think one player does transform the club, especially not one who's a 34-year-old fullback. But I just don't really see myself, because I feel like I've read a lot of this, what anyone would be complaining about in this signing. I think he's a perfectly useful addition to make for a free transfer. And of course, you've got to pay his wages, but for a free transfer, I see as a net gain for the club.
A short-term way of filling a gap that needs to be filled in the long term. But yeah, I mean, the experience, obviously they're bringing in as well, we believe, Socratis Papastathopoulos from...
Yeah, well, if nothing else, the thing is, not an original observation, but they've certainly found ways to get more letters on the back of the shirt.
They have, haven't we? With Lichtsteiner, Papastathopoulos, Mavropanos, Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan... Yeah. Maitland-Niles, get some more double barrel. What we need is some double barrel foreigners. We need Lichtsteiner, Papastathopoulos. Those two guys can have kids.
Yeah.
But it does look as if what they're trying to do with the defense, at least, is to add some experience to it, because there are young defenders at Arsenal. You know, Bellerin is pretty young. Kolasinac is still pretty young. Some of the guys who are heading towards the September of their careers, Laurent Koscielny, of course, has an injury. Nacho Monreal is 31, 32 now at this point. And then you've Holding and Chambers and these guys who perhaps need just that bit of guidance, not simply on the training pitch, but on the pitch as well.
Yeah, completely. And in the end, that job still falls first and foremost to Emery and his staff. And I think that's important to say as well. You can sign some players who bring a culture, and that's great. And I'm in favor of it. It still falls first and foremost to the manager, and Emery has got to prove that to us, I guess. I will be, as I would have been with any new manager, I'll be jury out on that until we see. But I don't see that it's sort of the Lichtsteiner signing in itself for me is just over and over again. All I'm saying when I look at it is I don't see how it hurts. I don't see how it hurts Arsenal, and I see ways in which it can help. And one of the ways is one you just said, which is, can he be a positive influence on young players who definitely need a positive influence? I think there's no question that there's been a lack of development in young defenders at Arsenal for a while now. I don't see how he hurts, and I think he might be able to help.
What did you make of the Emery appointment, seeing as we're talking about him? He came out of the blue, out of the darkness, late on to take the job when his name had barely even been mentioned. It was a surprise, but I think as a candidate, he ticks many of the right boxes in perhaps the same way that Lichtsteiner does at right back.
Yeah, I have to admit, he wasn't one of the names who I'd sort of was most excited about for Arsenal. I really would have liked them to personally see them go after someone else from the same league, which is Leonardo Jardim. I just think that he has a little bit more of the outwardly obvious, hardness about him. Think that I've felt like if you're going to take a step away from Arsene Wenger, a little bit of that hardness, a little bit of meanness might not be a bad thing for this squad right now, as someone who's a little bit tough. And I also think that Jardim, just sort of to say it, is a manager who basically has gone through his entire career. And I think when he first started out as a coach, he was coaching not only just amateur football, but amateur handball as well. He was sort of a dividing his time, has basically taken a step forward every single time in his career and has always proven himself at the step up. So I think he was a name that I was quite attached to as an Arsenal opportunity, because he hasn't had the, you know, because from, you know, whilst the some managers might be put off by the lack of Champions League football, even though he'd be losing that from Monaco to Arsenal, I think you really couldn't dispute it'd be a step forward in his career again. And I think he'd have an opportunity. The problem with Emery, it's not a problem, it's just sort of my perception of him, I guess. What happened at PSG is very hard to evaluate him on. I agree with the people who have said that. I think it's such a ridiculous, bizarre situation he found himself in this season, with Neymar, who was clearly being positioned by the club's owner as above all authority. And at that point, what do you do as a manager? Your authority is being undermined directly from the people who are supposed to be supporting you. I just don't know if I see that same edge to him. And that's a really intangible thing to say. I don't, when I see him talk, when I see the way he manages, I don't find him, there's something that still feels too much like a people pleaser in him, which I find frustrating, because I think that Arsenal don't necessarily need a people pleaser right now. I think they need someone who is willing to not please people, and who is willing to tell players what they need to hear rather than what's, you know, satisfying to hear. And maybe, you know, maybe that's just his public image against his private image and his coaching image. And maybe I'll be proved, happily proved wrong on that, and that he is much harder than what I see from him. So that's, you know, that's my hesitation with him, I guess, it's like an intangible thing. But somehow when I look at him, I just don't feel like I'm certain that his face fits in the way that I was hoping it would. And clearly I also don't have all the answers to these questions, by the way, otherwise I'd be off doing it myself. But his CV is excellent. He was available for nothing, for someone who the club can go and get right now and have in place early, which I think was important. I think the worst thing would have been to spend the whole summer dillying and dallying, waiting for people to sort out contracts. Like, you look at Maurizio Sarri at Napoli right now, and he's a fantastic manager. Again, I don't personally think his face would have fit. I think he's very... some of his social views are a little bit...
too much of an edge.
Outside the box of... Yeah, outside the box of what we are okay with in England. And I think he's, you know, someone who I just couldn't have imagined someone like Stan Kroenke appointing, because the risk of things in him saying things and doing things as he did, you know, flipping off Juventus fans on the way to the game this year. It's a bit outside the Premier League neat marketing bubble, I guess. But to get back to the point which I was saying there, was yes, you know, just the fact of not going for a manager like Sarri, who's still got a contract, who needs to be brought out of that contract, who seems to be, you know, all sides digging their heels in. Arsenal didn't need that. Arsenal needed someone who could come in and take the job, and for that, Sarri was clearly Emery was clearly available, and he had the CV. I'm by no means against the appointment. I'll be honest and say he wasn't my first choice either. Hopefully he'll prove all the reasons which I missed that he should have been.
Okay, but one of the other things I think we have to discuss when we discuss Emery is the fact that he was named head coach rather than manager, and I think we all understand the reasons why that happened. And maybe the last time we spoke, we talked about this structure that's in place now with a director of football, with a head of recruitment, with a chief executive who is clearly going to get more involved on the football side of things, whereas we have this traditional view of the chief executive looking after the business side. I think we can gather from what we've seen of Ivan Gazidis since Arsene Wenger's announcement was made, he is putting himself there front and center as part of the team that's going to run the football side of the club as well as the business side of the club. So the head coach or the manager or whatever you want to call him has got to operate within that structure as well. Do you have any concerns about how those three men are going to work together? You know, when Wenger went, there is a huge power vacuum, a gap in which someone or many people or some people have to fill. So if they're all in there together and they're all rowing in the same direction, that's great. There is perhaps the possibility that, you know, over time, those relationships might, you know, see them rowing in different directions. Do you have concerns about that? Because it is so different from the way Arsenal have operated over the last 22 years and you know, in the entire existence, basically, before that.
I mean, I think I'd only say I have concerns in as much as these are all new faces and seeing how they work together is you know, to be seen. But I don't have concerns about it as a structure because I think it's just that's how modern football works. I mean, if you look at another person who was being mooted at a certain point for the Arsenal job and who I don't doubt would also have been an excellent appointment, Massimiliano Allegri, that is what he works with at Juventus. He works as a coach rather than manager that we are used to in the sort of traditional sense in English football, where exactly as you said at the beginning, we talk about the manager making the signings. And I don't think that, you know, I don't think that there's any reason to be afraid of it as a structure. Yeah. Look, Zinedine Zidane was the coach at Real Madrid. They've just won their third Champions League in a row.
Uh-huh.
Massimiliano Allegri is the head coach rather than the manager at Juventus. They've just won their seventh title, their fourth double in a row. Under him, four consecutive doubles. There's nothing against that structure inherently that stops it from being a success. Of course, we don't know these individuals, even the ones who have been there at the end of the Wenger tenure were so sort of having to play to the structure that Wenger had set up and in which Wenger was the ultimate sort of head of everything, that we don't know for sure what was their work and what wasn't. So it's an uncertain time for Arsenal, and knowing how that all fits is a big question. What you'd like to hope is that Gazidis, who is leading all of this, has made sure that all three of these appointments are people who work together. You know, Mislintat, Sanjehi and Emery, he'd like to hope that he's got them all together during the interview processes and said to them, you know, do you like this guy? Do you think that you can work with this guy? Do you think that you're going to mesh? And that he's made those considerations part of the process. Whether or not it's going to mesh, you know, I don't think I can say that until we see it. I think we just have to see how it goes.
Yeah, give it some time. What are you expecting? Well, let me put it a different way. What would you like to see from the club this summer in terms of transfers? Because we have a limited amount of time. There's a World Cup on, which is a bit of a distraction as well. Where do you see the need for players? Let's make the assumption that Lichtsteiner and Papastathopoulos are done. We know Lichtsteiner is, but the other guy pretty much is as well from everything we've read. Beyond that, what would you like to see to make this team more competitive, to get it back into the top four?
Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, obviously,
I don't mean individuals, by the way. I just sort of mean positions. I don't want you to say we need to buy this guy from wherever. But
sorry, give me one second. The dog is crunching something very noisy.
He is actually. Yeah. What's the dog called?
He found a bottle. His name is Ross.
Ross.
And he's now looking at me with the most pained expression.
You bastard, you took my bottle off me. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
It's never your bottle. I just knocked it on the floor, Ross. Okay. sorry about that. Should you want to say the question again or should I just pick it up? Or?
No, I think we should just keep going because, you know, just dog intervention on the podcast is
dog
amazing
time
to me.
Is never bad time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think there's obviously everyone is still going to look at the defensive positions because this team concedes too many goals. And I have some difficulty with that just because it's not like there haven't been signings and players brought in already to address that situation. I mean, if you look even at centre-back, there's actually a lot of bodies now. There's, you know, there's Chambers, there's Holding, there's Mavropanos playing games at the end of the year. They've got Koscielny and Mustafi. There's a lot of bodies there, and I think that what needs to happen first is a serious analysis of which of these guys are going to stay and be contributors before you start looking at adding more to that mix. You need to say who here is actually up to the task and who isn't. I think that you know, you could say the same thing in central midfield. Have we still, after all this time, got a proper holding midfielder who we feel comfortable and who we can trust? Well, I mean, Xhaka isn't a holding midfielder. He's someone who aspires to be, I think, more of an Ante Pirlo. He aspires to play those passes in the middle of the park. And, you know, you've got a lot of players who can play through the middle who all want to be quite attacking between Ramsey and Ozil and everyone else. There's a lot of players trying to do the same things. And what's Elneny's role in this situation? It didn't feel like he really contributed much to this last season. So it feels like there's almost needs to be subtraction before you get addition in those areas to me, which I know might not feel like a popular thing to say, because people are going to just look and say, oh, well, Arsenal aren't good enough in those spaces, so you need to sign someone. I think that I still could stand more depth at the fullback, conversely. I think that, you know, that could be a position, you know, something at left back, certainly. There's clearly no need for more strikers. Funnily enough, the thing which I keep coming back to, and I guess there's going to sound like I'm contradicting myself here in terms of positions that are already overloaded, because I know we've already got attacking midfield players like Ozil, like Mkhitaryan, like Ramsey. I sort of feel like there hasn't been enough real quality wing play in the last year. I think that someone who really has that speed, the threat of getting in behind people, the threat of just running at a fullback has been missing. I know Iwobi's supposed to do that, but he hasn't been as effective as we'd like this season. And so, again, I suppose you have to ask the question of, well, is it subtraction before addition? But I just really would love there to be someone in that team who I really felt like was just going to beat the fullback and put the ball into the middle, especially now, because Arsenal really have got a couple of proper penalty box strikers for the first time in a long time. You know, Aubameyang and Aubameyang and Lacazette are proper penalty box strikers, so put the ball in for them, make that happen. I actually think width is the area in general that bothers me the most still. Is there enough at fullback? Is there enough on the wings? Yes, a great centre back wouldn't hurt the team, and nor would a great holding midfielder, but I just want to know what's happening with everyone who's already there first.
Okay, well, we'll see. Obviously, what does happen, the summer is short, so we don't have too long to wait, and I think they're going to want to do as much business as they possibly can as early as they can. But that's for the weeks ahead. I just wanted to touch very quickly on the Premier League and the announcement that a package of games has been sold to Amazon from the start of next season. And that takes us into a new era in some ways, because they're not available as a traditional broadcaster on a traditional platform. It's the new era. They're going to stream the games via Amazon Prime. And I don't think there's anything wrong per se in looking at what technology does and how people consume football these days and providing people an option in that regard. It's not a huge option. It's only going to be 20 games, and those 20 games are only going to be over the course of 2 days. They're going to stream all 10 games on two particular days, I think on a bank holiday and one midweek game. So it's not a huge amount of football on that particular platform. However, the reason why there was a demand to break up the Sky monopoly, if you like, was in order to give consumers, customers, supporters, football fans, whatever you want to call them, more choice. Mm-hmm. But it hasn't really given us more choice. What it's done is given us more subscriptions and more expense if we want to watch all the games that are available to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. I think what's fascinating about this deal is exactly as you mentioned, is the idea of a whole weekend worth of games at once. And it's clear that what's happening is that the Premier League is trying to assess that, trying to assess the idea of, if we put all the games out, how does that affect everything else? Because actually the Premier League is, perhaps now we operate in a global market, will view itself as behind, for instance, the NFL, where you can, in America and indeed internationally, buy a package on TV that lets you watch every game. The difference being that in America, they have these sort of, because of the size of the country, they're able to have these localized blackout laws. So you buy the package that lets you watch every game live, but they can say that the local game, the one that's in your area, gets blacked out if enough tickets don't sell, which is, I can't remember what the exact figure is, but it's like 75% of tickets or something.
Right.
But it's clear to me that that's what's happening. And I think it actually has to happen now for the Premier League's point of view, because the fact is that enough people are working out how to stream games live without their official say-so anyway. A bit like, you know, iTunes was a reaction to the fact that everyone was downloading their music for free. The Premier League has a choice to make, which is either you work out how to stream every game and make it viable that you can sell that and trust that people will generally pay for something and do it legally rather than not pay for it and do it illegally in general. I think that's the position they're in, and that's why they're having to do something like this. Now, and in that regard, Amazon makes sense as a partner, because Amazon are a partner who already has a very successful video streaming service. So, you know, one of them or Netflix or, you know, I don't know, something like that makes sense, because you go with someone who's already shown they can operate a streaming service. But your point about packages is absolutely valid. And I think this is something that... I don't know how it resolves itself other than the market. So the reason the Premier League is able to sort of toot its horn and say it's the best league in the world is because it's the wealthiest league in the world. And that is absolute. The money that's going into the Premier League clubs' pockets now is of a different order from TV money than any of the other leagues in Europe, La Liga included, and it's by a substantial measure now. And as consumers, English football fans like that. English football fans like to be able to watch their teams and believe that they are the best in the world, even though the Champions League results haven't borne that out for a little while. The problem is that money doesn't come from nowhere. The reason that Premier League clubs are spending the most on transfers, are paying the highest wages, are drawing, in general, a lot of the world's best players. Still not all. You know, it turns out that Real Madrid, Barcelona, clubs like that can use their stature and their own substantial financial backing to still keep hold of players like Messi and Ronaldo. But the reason that all happens is because English fans have been willing to pay more and more and more. And it's not, a novel thing to an extent. English fans have always been amongst the very best in the world at traveling to World Cups, for instance, and that's an expense. English fans are, in general, fans who are willing to put their hands in their pocket and go and support their team. And to an extent, that feels, I don't know if noble's the right word, but it feels sort of, within a context of what it means to be part of a club, sort of quite worthy to go and follow your club wherever and whenever. But these clubs are now very efficient businesses. And if they see that you're willing to put your hand in your pocket and spend more money, then they're going to be happy to let you stick your hand in your pocket and take more of your money, which is what businesses do. And all of these TV deals, whether it's a new provider or an old provider, have always ultimately had the result that you pay more for it. Whether it's your Sky deal going up or it's now you've got to get BT and Sky and Amazon, you're always paying more. And the only way that stops ultimately is when people stop being willing to pay more. For me, it's not a big deal, the Amazon thing, because I live in a household where we've sort of worked out between us that between the delivery costs that we spend, between the music service, which is an alternative to Spotify, which you get with Prime, between that and then getting the Amazon Prime Video, it was worth it. So you pay for it. But yes, as a sort of overall cultural point, we're constantly all spending more and more money on all of these subscription services, and we all have to work out what our budgets can and can't stretch to. And I do see that for some people, being told, hey, now you've got to pay for another thing, is going to be a step too far. But frankly, that was already true with BT, by the way. BT don't have the same subscriber base that Sky do.
That is true. I mean, do you see this very quickly as dipping their toes in the water to see, A, how it works, B, what the reaction is from consumers with an online streaming service, what the numbers are like? Because, BT obviously have ploughed a huge amount of money in, but when you look at their figures and viewing figures, they're really very small. You know, Champions League went from tens of millions at times in terms of viewing figures to well below a million with BT. So the money only goes so far when the product doesn't get the same reach, when the advertisers don't get the same reach. But like you say, the model is changing. The way people consume everything is changing. We don't all sit down in front of our TV anymore. We look at stuff on our phones or our tablet or, however or whatever device we're going to be looking at stuff on in 5 years' time that we haven't even conceived of yet, perhaps. So it might be a way of them looking at, A, how do we move into this other market or other distribution platform, but also perhaps change the model completely, because it has been very reliant on, even if it is satellite, it's terrestrial in a way, because everyone's got to have a dish, everyone's got to have a TV.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. In the end, I think the younger households now don't have Sky. I think that it's the cost of it, like the conventional getting a satellite dish and having a Sky box in your household, that that's a thing which Sky have, you know, are wrestling with, and retention and working out how to get a 20-year-old to do that is, you know, two strands of the same thing, which is how to, you know, maintain and build a customer base. I think that a 20-year-old is much more likely to have an Amazon Prime membership now. If they are using Sky, they might be watching it through Now TV, which is, you know, Sky's own attempt to keep hold of those viewers. And in general, they are much more likely to be streaming things, yes, on a computer or on an iPad. I mean, I still have a TV in my front room, but I have friends who are my age, which is not 20, and who no longer have TVs because they just, you know, use their tablets or their computers and watch everything that way. I think that is the way the world is changing. And so to go again into streaming and to go do it with a partner like Amazon, who are already established in that area, who have the expertise to run a platform successfully, that makes total sense. And in the end, this is still quite a cautious first step. I mean, as you've already said, it's a couple of weekends. It's a couple of weekends trial run. But I do think it's the precursor to, whether it's with Amazon or someone else, This is the precursor to a full-time streaming future, because that's just the way that TV is going.
Yeah, I think so. And maybe we'll, you know, eventually end up in a system whereby you can perhaps buy an online streaming service for the team that you support, and you don't have to pay, you know, for all the matches. If you just want to watch Arsenal, you buy an Arsenal online season ticket. That seems a natural progression for me. It's something I've been talking about for a long time. I would pay that.
It would make a lot. Yeah, it would make a lot of sense for the viewer. It would make a lot of sense for the viewer, and it would potentially make a lot of sense for Arsenal as well. The problem that you'll run into there will be whether it makes sense for the Premier League, yeah, and at that point, who wins.
And smaller clubs, obviously.
Exactly. Because the smaller clubs will lose in that deal. They'll have less money. And then you run into the situation which will get proposed again. It's already been proposed again of, well, then are we better off saying goodbye to small clubs and having a European league? And that, you know, that conversation is going to continue over the next few years as well.
Oh boy. There's a lot coming down the line, Paolo.
I'm sorry, and I need to get off in a second, but that is the way I frame all of this at the moment. It's all part of a bigger picture.
All right. Well, look, we'll see what develops. Paolo, as ever, a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you to you and to Ross.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. Guys, it's just you.
It's just me.
It is just a habit of when I'm on like phone calls with people. I say, cheers, guys.
That's all right. I've got dogs downstairs too, so I'll include them.
There you
them.
Go. I was talking to the dogs. That was what I meant. Yeah, the dogs. You and the dogs.
Cheers, Paolo.
No problem. Speak soon.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with, thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thanks very much indeed to Paolo. You can find him on Twitter at Paolo_Bandini. That is at Paolo_Bandini. Interesting stuff about Stefan Lichtsteiner. He is going to be a backup right back. That's what he is. That's what he's in the squad for from a footballing point of view. But perhaps we'll get more out of him in terms of his experience and the knowledge and the character and perhaps the cynicism that he can pass on to some of our players who could do with a little dose of that, I think. Take that yellow card. Chop that guy down on the halfway line. Unless you're Granit Xhaka, don't do it, though. Everybody else can do it. Xhaka gets sent off. You know, those kind of things where you prevent danger further away from goal than normal. You prevent the opposition building momentum. Small things like that can make a big difference in games, and maybe he's been brought in to teach us a bit of that, in which case I'm all for it. I am all for it. There's not a great deal else going on. We are expected to sign, as we said, Papastathopoulos, and there is also the reports that we've signed this 17-year-old PSG midfielder called Yassine Adli. I hope I'm saying that right. He's coming in on what is believed to be a 3-year deal with a 2-year option at 17. Perhaps it's a bit soon for Premier League, but he did make his debut for PSG last season, and we do have Europa League. We've got Capital One Cup or Worthington Cup or Carabao Cup or whatever the hell cup it is this season. We don't know. We don't know. It could well be Carabao. Look, it's not that we don't know. I just can't be arsed to look it up. You look it up. You've got Google right there. Alexa, who sponsors the English League Cup? There you go. For all those of you who have Alexa. Siri, who sponsors the English League Cup? Okay, Google, who sponsors the English League Cup? Right, I think I've got all of you covered right there. Yeah, maybe he's a guy who's going to come in and make his breakthrough in that, and perhaps by the end of the season, he could be a first-team player or somebody much more involved in Premier League action. I don't know. I'm just hoping. I'm looking at best-case scenario here because I am, like all of you, filled with huge optimism and excitement for the new season. You are, right? Yeah? Okay, some of you are. And some people need to be convinced, and that's fair enough. That is fair enough. So, look, I'm going to leave it there. Just a reminder that if you like what we do here on Arsblog, if you like the podcast, if you like what we do on Arsblog and Arsblog News, and you want to support the site, you can do that by signing up to be an Arsblog member on Patreon. It costs just €5 a month. What will that get you in the real world? Maybe a pint of craft beer? Half a pack of cigarettes. Maybe you could get a burrito or a sandwich from Marks and Spencer's. But if you wanted to spend that €5 on becoming an Arsblog member on Patreon, we would very much appreciate that. And you do get more stuff. It's not just spending a fiver for nothing. You get extra content, extra podcasts. If you're just signing up now, you can hear me talk to the likes of Mark Strong, James Vincent McMorrow, John Keeble, who's the drummer in Spandau Ballet, Bernard Butler, Tim Wheeler from Ash. They're all Arsenal fans, and I talk to them about their life and times as an Arsenal fan. We've got history podcasts. There's one coming up this month about the 2001-2002 season in which Arsenal won the double. There are long reads, different articles, all kinds of stuff in there. That's what you get for your €5, as well as the warm glow of knowing that your €5 will be spent productively on creating great Arsenal content for you, and it will continue to do so in the future. So if you want to sign up, it's patreon.com/arsblog. That's patreon.com/arsblog. Right, that's it. James and I will be here with an Arscast Extra on Monday. Until then, the weather looks good, the sun is shining. Have yourselves a great summer weekend. Catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
And finally in this bulletin, a company in Russia has put on sale a brand new digital assistant to rival some of the ones already on the market today. Like those devices, it will be always on and always listening and logging every single thing that you say and storing it in a massive database somewhere for all eternity. That private conversation you thought you were having with your girlfriend about that thing you've always wanted to try, well, they know. This new product, while equally sinister, offsets that by using the voice of former Arsenal star Andrei Arshavin. It works in a very familiar way. Arshavin, where is the nearest pie shop?
Oh, Arshavin really loved pie. Please take Arshavin to have pie at Vladimir's Pie Shop, located only 3 minutes from here.
Arshavin, where is the nearest pet grooming facility?
Arshavin think you should go to Shampoodle. It's located 4-hour drive from here.
But Arshavin, I want to go to the nearest dog grooming emporium.
Yes, I know, but Shampoodle is right beside Biscuit Factory. Arshavin really, really like Biscuit. Oh, so like Biscuit. Really want Biscuit now, please, to give me Biscuit. I am like dog. Little digital doggy Arshavin, please give me Biscuit. Woof, woof. I lick your face, please.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.